This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
That is the percolating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 5 p.m. on a Thursday and time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and storytelling, right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston Community Radio. Well, I'm your host today, Eric Heen, backed up by the most talented team in radio. And here at So What's Your Story, every week, we bring you great stories from great storytellers. Now, before we get to our stories today, I'd like to remind you all that we are in the midst of our pledge drive. So now is the time for us all to get together and support this radio station. To donate, you can call us at 713-526-5738, and that's also 713-JAM-KPFT. Or you could go to kpft.org and click on the donate button, and then you could scroll down to the program So What's Your Story to designate us as the program you support. So it's 713-526-5738, or go to kpft.org and click on donate. Well, this week we're going to look at an archetypal character found in folktales all over the world. That is the character of the trickster. And these are characters that break the rules to outwit others, to get what they want, often with hilarious results. Tricksters can be regular people, but they're often animals like Brer Rabbit, or they can be mythical creatures like leprechauns and fairies. And in folklore, tricksters aren't only a lot of fun, but they also serve a purpose of giving the common people hope that they can prevail by using their own wits. So our first storyteller tonight will be Chuji Kingfisher. Chuji is a Cherokee Native American. He travels the world educating and entertaining folks with his stories. He's been selected to record stories for the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. And in 2019, Chuji received the honor of Cherokee National Treasure. Chuji, you're a national treasure, and it's great to have you back here on So What's Your Story? Well,
thank you. It's a great honor to be asked to come back onto the program, and just thinking about this time, and I always come into a program, don't ever really know what story I'm going to tell, but seeing as how we're going into the trickster theme, you know, right. there's a lot of stories here in our Cherokee culture that surrounds our trickster, and our trickster is Jistu, the rabbit. And so I want to share a story with you guys this evening, and I hope you enjoy it.
Great.
One day, as Jistu the trickster rabbit was walking through the woods, his stomach began to growl with hunger. Oh, he grabbed his stomach. He began to yell, "Oh, I'm so hungry. I've got to find me something to eat." He began to look on the ground, but all he saw were dirt and rocks. So he continued to walk, and again, the hunger pain struck, and he grabbed his stomach and said, "Oh, my goodness, I got to find something to eat." He began to look into the trees, but all he saw were leaves and sticks. Oh, Rabbit, he was feeling so sorry for himself as he came to the edge of a very large pond. He said, "Oh, my goodness, I'm so hungry. I'm just going to starve to death." And as he was crying, he heard a splash in the water. He looked down into the water. Oh, there was a huge fish that jumped out and seemed to almost just make fun of him. The rabbit jumped up. He said, "Oh, my goodness, if I could swim any better, I would dive into that water. I would catch that fish right there." But Rabbit sat down once again as he realized that he wasn't a very good swimmer. Again, as he was feeling sorry for himself, he heard another noise, another splash, but this time across the water. as he looked up and out across the pond there on the other side, he saw Coyote. Now, Coyote, even in that time, was a very smart fellow. He had made himself a fishing hook, tied some string to it and a line, and the splash that Rabbit heard was Coyote pulling out a very large fish. Rabbit jumped up and he tried to get his attention. Say, hey, old man Coyote, let me have that fish and you can grab you another one. You can catch you another one, surely. But old man Coyote pretended he didn't hear him. Reached down and pulled the fish off the hook and reached into the water and pulled out a stringer of fish. Oh, Rabbit couldn't believe what he was seeing. He said, old man Coyote, let me have just one. I'm so hungry. But the Coyote threw the fish over his shoulder and took off walking. Now, Rabbit felt he was done very wrong. As he took off running around the edge of the pond, he was thinking of a way to get the Coyote back. As he was running, he said, I know. He said, I won't take just one fish. I'll take all his fish. Yeah, that's what I'll do. And he ran way ahead of the Coyote. And he laid down in the path and he pretended to be dead. And along came the Coyote. The Coyote saw the Rabbit lying there and said, hey, look over there. There's a dead rabbit. He said, you know, rabbit soup sure would be good tonight. And he reached down to pick up the rabbit and the fish slid from his shoulders. He said, wait, I worked very hard catching all these fish. So I'm going to leave this rabbit here for someone else. And I'm going to go home and I'm going to cook my fish. So he stepped over the rabbit and he continued to walk. The rabbit waited till Coyote was out of sight and he jumped up. He said, oh my goodness, I thought I had him for sure. I'm going to try it again. So he took off running through the woods as fast as he could. And he got way ahead of the Coyote and he laid down on the path and pretended to be dead. And along came the Coyote. Hey, look at there. There's another dead rabbit. Oh, if I take that rabbit home, I could make a good rabbit soup. Oh, I can taste it now with cornbread. Oh, my mouth is just watering. And as he reached down to pick up the rabbit, the fish again slid from his shoulders. He says, oh, yeah, I was going home to cook my fish. Rabbit, I'm going to leave you here for somebody else. And he stepped over the rabbit and continued walking. The rabbit jumped up. And he said, oh, my goodness, come on, Coyote. Just one time, lay those fish down, and they're mine. I'm going to try it again. So he took off running through the woods again and got way ahead of the Coyote, and he laid down their path and pretended to be dead. And along came the Coyote. Hey, look at there. There's another dead rabbit, said the Coyote. Oh, these rabbits, they're just dying everywhere today. You know what? As I'm sitting here thinking, looking at this dead rabbit, I think Creator is telling me that I need to have rabbit soup today. Yeah, that's what he's telling me. And he's telling me I need to save my fish for another day. You know what? This is just one dead rabbit. There's two more dead rabbits back there behind me. And if I go back and get those other two dead rabbits, oh, that's three dead rabbits. Oh, I can taste that soup now. I'm going to eat like a king tonight. And as he laid the fish down, he turned around to get the other two dead rabbits. Now, we all know there weren't two dead rabbits. We all know there wasn't even one dead rabbit. And as the Coyote turned around, the rabbit jumped up, grabbed those fish and took off running with the hoop. Woohoo! And the Coyote turned around. He said, hey, you got my fish. And he took off running after him. My grandpa, he always used to tell me, he said, Chuji, he said, if you see a rabbit come running by you, shoom, he used to stop and wait. I said, how come, Grandpa? He said, because Coyote might be chasing the rabbit, trying to get his fish back. At least that's what my grandpa used to tell me.
I love it. I love how you end your stories, Chuji. It's
yeah, great. They always used to tell us this a lot of the time. when it's about those trickster stories, it's usually something that you've done and you don't want to fess up to being guilty about it. You know, that you were actually the trickster pulling that trick on somebody.
Oh, yeah. I always wonder, kids hear these stories and they might think, hey, it's okay to deceive somebody.
Yeah.
There's usually a good lesson in the end of these stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Chuji, I really appreciate your stories tonight. They're always great. And now I know the pandemic that's affected all of us and you in particular. I know you've got all these projects going on. All of a sudden they come to a halt over a year ago.
Yes.
So how is that going now? Are things, anything good happening on the horizon? Or
things have picked up slowly. For my dance troupe, we've been slowly getting back out into the school system. And for my storytelling, one of my engagements this fall will be at Mammoth Cave, Kentucky, August the 21st. So if anyone is in the area at that time, come out and see us. My dance troupe will be there. I'll be there. We'll be talking about Cherokee culture. We'll be talking about other things as well, because as a tradition, Cherokee aren't powwow people. So we'll explain just a little bit more during that time. But again, that's August the 21st there at Mammoth Cave, Kentucky. Welcome each and everyone out to be with us. It's kind of a living archaeology weekend is what it is. And we always have a wonderful time when we get out and able to do things like that.
Yeah, events like that, they're not only entertaining, they're very educational.
So. Yes, they are.
Now, in these festivities, are they often open to the general public or a lot just restricted to Native Americans?
No, they're open to the general public, but I believe if people want to see powwows.com is a big one that mm-hmm. they can go and see what powwows close to their area. They're everywhere. You just got to know where to look. I believe a lot more people need to get out and experience that so they'll understand just a little bit more that we're not historical Indians. We're actually living, breathing, living, you know.
Okay. Well, we'll spread the word on that. Get out and see powwows. They're open to the public. Okay, Chuji, I can see why they call you a Cherokee National Treasure.
We really well, thank you.
Tonight. And good luck to you and all your endeavors.
Thank you very much.
Well, our next guest tonight is Scott Hilton Davis. Scott is an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, author, storyteller, and publisher. Scott is also the author of two short story collections, Souls Are Flying, A Celebration of Jewish Stories, and Hanukkah Tales from Oikovechnik. Scott, it's great to have you here on So What's Your Story?
Oh, thank you, Eric. It's so good to be here with you.
Did I pronounce that right? Oikovechnik? Is that close?
Oikovechnik.
Oikovechnik.
Oi, you know when people say, oi, it's so bad, it's so terrible. Oi.
Oi.
And then kvetch is to complain.
Ah.
And nick is like a person, a beatnik, and an all right nick. No good, Nick.
So there's meaning there. All right. Yeah, I'm working on my Yiddish. I'll get there.
That's great.
So now, Scott, you founded the Jewish Storyteller Press, and this organization brings the works of Jewish writers to the mainstream reading public?
Yes, yes. So Jewish Storyteller Press was created in 2007 as a way of bringing English translations of 19th century Jewish writers to 21st century readers. And they were written in Yiddish. And so to bring them into the 21st century, they either had to be translated English translations that I've discovered have been kind of reworked and retold for modern readers.
Ah. Scott, tonight we're covering a theme of this trickster character. And I understand you'll be telling us a Jewish story on this theme. And would you like to set this story up for us before you tell it?
Sure. This is a story by the Jewish writer Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem was a very popular author between 1890 and he died in 1915, and he was noted for writing novels, short stories, and plays, and he was is kind of thought of as a Jewish Mark Twain. He was a humorist. In fact, there's a story, no one knows if it's really true or not, that at some point, Shalom Aleichem met Mark Twain in New York City. Ah. And Shalom Aleichem said to Mark Twain, "My people consider me the Jewish Mark Twain." And Mark Twain replied, "And my people consider me the American Shalom Aleichem."
Aha. Uh-huh. It works so, both ways there.
It does. Now, the one thing about Shalom Aleichem that people might know or might be interested in is that his stories about Tevye the Dairyman were turned into the Broadway musical Fiddler on the Roof.
Ah, yeah.
So he may be one of the most well-known Jewish writers from that period. But this particular story, which I call Eternal Life, is about a citizen of the town of Kozrilivka, which means the town of little people, of little poor people. And this is where the trickster comes in, because this person is what we call in Yiddish a Luftmensch, which basically means an airman, someone who can pull their livelihood out of thin air. And that's what's going on here in this story by Shalom Aleichem. And one of the things about Shalom Aleichem is that he often included himself in the story. Someone is referring to him in the story. So here's how it goes. "So you're wondering, Mr. Shalom Aleichem, how a citizen of Kozrilivka ended up in Paris, France. Well, I'll tell you. I got tired of going hungry every night in Kozrilivka. So I decided to seek my fortune elsewhere. As it is written, seek and ye shall find. So off I went into the world, and for months I traveled from town to town trying to eke out a living, until one day I found myself on the streets of Paris without a coin in my pocket. The only Jew I knew in Paris was the famous banker Rothschild. Of course, I didn't know him personally, but that never stopped me before. So I paid a little visit to Rothschild's mansion. I knocked, and the butler opened the door. He took one look at me and closed the door in my face. And I have to admit, it did not look good. But a Kozrilic never gives up. So I knocked again, and this time when the butler opened the door, I said, 'Just a minute, Monsieur Butler. I am a merchant from Kozrilivka, and I have something to sell your master that he cannot buy in Paris for any price.' Well, when this was brought to Rothschild's attention, his curiosity got the best of him, and he invited me in. Shalom Aleichem, peace unto you, Rothschild said as I entered the room. Aleichem shalom, Monsieur Rothschild, and unto you peace. What good news do you bring? Well, Monsieur Rothschild, I have heard it said in Kozrilivka that you are pretty well off, and I don't suppose you lack for honors either. But there is one thing you do not have. And what is that? Eternal life. Eternal life? Yes, Monsieur Rothschild, eternal life. Life everlasting. His eyes grew wide. All right, he said. Let's get down to business. Name your price. Oh, my price is 300 francs. 300? Very well. Here's your money. So right then and there, Rothschild pulls out his wallet, counts out 300 banknotes, puts them into my hand, and I shove them into my pocket. All right, let's get on with it. Monsieur Rothschild, for eternal life, you must immediately pack all your belongings and move to Kozrilivka. Kozrilivka? Yes, Kozrilivka. There you will never die. For as long as Kozrilivka has been in existence, no rich man has ever died there.
Oh, my God. I love that, Scott.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's a typical Shalom Aleichem story.
Yeah, that's a trickster story. Kozrilivka?
That's it. Kozrilivka, the town of little poor people. Shalom Aleichem wrote several stories that were set in this little town, Kozrilivka. In fact, I sort of based my little town of Vykvechnik on Shalom Aleichem's Kozrilivka.
Ah.
Now in the Broadway musical, of course, they've turned Kozrilivka into Anatevka.
Anatevka.
Exactly. Probably because Anatevka is easier to rhyme than Kozrilivka.
You know, ironically, Scott, it seems to me some of this material probably wouldn't have developed like it had they been in the mainstream.
I think you're absolutely right, Eric. And what's interesting about this is it also is sort of an illustration of the need to create, of the need to tell stories and the need to be engaged in culture. And that that God-given desire will emerge somehow, some way. And these stories, parrots, Shalom Aleichem often, would kind of refer back to folklore and then write a modern story that would embrace what was going on, that would inform what was going on at that particular time.
Right. Well, Scott, we're almost out of time here. And before we let you go, I'd like to mention your books. One is Souls Are Flying, which is a celebration of Jewish stories. And the other one is Hanukkah Tales from Vykvechnik. And these books, they can be found on your website, JewishStorytellerPress.com, and also on Amazon.
Yes, they're available on Amazon as well.
Yeah, I've started the first one, Souls Are Flying, and I recommend that highly. I loved it right off the bat.
Thank you.
Scott, thanks again for being here. Thanks for that great story and for all your excellent insights on Jewish folklore.
Oh, thank you, Eric. Thanks so much for this opportunity to be with you today.
Well, this is Eric Heen, and you are listening to So What's Your Story, only on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Huntsville. Our show is sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild, a great place to learn how to tell stories and share them. The Guild meets the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30, and everybody is invited. So the next meeting will be June 28th. And to get more information on the Guild and on these story swaps, you can go to HoustonStorytellers.org. Also, the Moth Storytelling Organization, they meet the second Tuesday of every month down at the Warehouse Live. So their next story slam will be there at Warehouse Live on June 14th. And of course, our program here, So What's Your Story, airs every Thursday at 5 p.m. on KPFT 90.1 FM. And it is also live streamed at kpft.org. And you can visit us on our Facebook page, So What's Your Story, to find out more about us. Also, of course, we are in the midst of our pledge drive, so we ask for your support. Give us a call at 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org and click on the donate button. And we really appreciate your support because just think of Houston without KPFT radio. We'd all be stuck with the same worn-out commercial music, instead of the real cutting-edge stuff. Like, we got Zydeco music, Celtic, local singer-songwriters. Without KPFT, nobody else in Houston would provide us that kind of music. KPFT also provides other cutting-edge programs addressing things like the LGBT community, Arab Voices, the prison show, things nobody else in town would cover if it weren't for KPFT. So let's keep this unique program alive and well, because if KPFT wasn't here to do it, nobody else would. So give us a call at 713-526-5738 or visit us at kpft.org and click on the donate button. Well, now we're going to get back to our storytellers today. They're all sharing stories about this character common to folk tales all around the world, and that is the trickster character. Well, our next guest today is Sally Bates Goodrow. Anyone who listens to our program knows Sally. She's been on numerous times. Sally's been telling stories since 1986. She's a co-founder of the Houston Storytellers Guild, and she's a librarian with the Houston Public Library. Her favorite tales to tell come from folklore. Sally, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thanks so much.
Welcome back. I mean, it's been a long time. You haven't been on our program since before COVID.
I know. We all say BC before COVID.
Yeah, it's a whole different era. So what have you been up to the last couple of years?
Well, I've been, the library's been through some things. We got pretty creative with offering services virtually and also a lot of e-materials. And I did some online storytelling, which was fun. And I have enjoyed the virtual workshops and conferences because you can hear storytellers from all over the world. And so I'm kind of hoping that continues.
Now, Sally, tonight we are focusing on stories that feature a trickster character. And you're very much an expert on folktales. So how common is this character in folktales around the world?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but
I would.
The trickster is definitely very common, and it's either usually an animal or sometimes it's a kind of a slash creator, foolish, or someone with strong desires, like somebody who wants what they want when they want it. It depends which part of the world you're in. Like in the Northwest, it's raven. In the Southeast, it's usually rabbit. African-American stories, it might be Anansi from West Africa, who then migrated to the U.S. And in Europe, a lot of times it's people that are sometimes kind of like con men or like that. So,
well, you got some trickster tales up your sleeve for us today. Let's hear the first one.
Okay, this is a story about Coyote. Coyote is a trickster in the Southwest, and there are a lot of great coyote stories. Sometimes he's a creator kind of character, and sometimes he's not very smart. But he's always very extreme, like most tricksters are. So back in the before time, there was the sun to light up the earth during the day, and at night there was the moon, but there didn't used to be any stars. So the night creatures asked the sky god if they could have some kind of light that would be constant, because the moon came and went and they wanted just some light. So the creator god came down and said, "I understand what you need and I know how to do it. And first, what I want you to do is go in all directions and gather stones, small stones, not very big, but stones that are not smooth, stones that are kind of prickly and have rough edges." So all the animals, they spread out and they gathered stones until they had big heaps of stones. And then the sky god said, "Now, tomorrow night at twilight, I want you to come back and I am going to make the sky touch the earth so that you can go up in the sky. And I want you to take each of you a handful of stones and you'll be able to make whatever pictures you want up in the sky. The stones will attach to the sky and they'll glimmer and glow and become the lights for the night." but I want you to rest tomorrow to make sure you can stay up. And I'm only leaving this for one night. So you have to do it in that night. And when it's done, that's it. You can't go up anymore. Also, I need a volunteer to do something special. And Coyote is in the back going, yay, me, 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 me. And Creator God says, oh, okay, Coyote. Okay, you can be the special one. And what I want you to do is take the stones to where the animals are, because not all the animals can take enough stones to make a whole picture. So you'll have the bag of stones. And if anybody needs any more, they can come, they can call for you and you'll come and bring them some more. Well, Coyote thought he was so, so very important. And so instead of resting all the next day, he went from animal to animal and said, you know, Creator God picked me to do that. Sky God says, I'm the important one. My job is more important than any of yours. So he had not rested at all when twilight came. Well, all the animals gathered and each one of them took a handful, just as many stones as they could carry. And Sky God made the sky touch the earth. And so the animals could just walk up into the sky, which was amazing. Can you imagine that? That would be so cool. So they each found their little piece of the sky and they started to make whatever picture they wanted. And when they put the rocks into the sky, the rocks would immediately turn into light and glow and flicker and just beautiful. Well, pretty soon they started running out of stones. And so they were saying, Coyote, come here. Coyote, I need some more stones. Coyote, up here. So Coyote was running from one side of the sky to the other. And Coyote was getting kind of tired. And that bag of stones he had, it was very heavy. So when nobody was looking, Coyote would reach in the bag and grab a handful and just fling it over his shoulder because, oh man, that was heavy. And surely they couldn't use all the stones. And then finally he got so tired, he found a little tiny corner where nobody was working and he curled up and fell asleep. Well, next thing you know, they're calling out, this is it. You have to come out of the sky. Everybody out. We're done. And Coyote leapt up, grabbed his sack and looked around him. He thought, oh no, I was asleep all this time. But he had to get down. He had to get out of the sky or he'd be stuck there. So Coyote came down out of the sky and people were mad at him. They said, Coyote, I called and called and called and you didn't come. Well, the very next night, darkness came and everyone looked to see how their pictures turned out. And some of them, especially the bigger animals, they had been able to carry a lot of stones and all of their picture was there, like bear and fisher. They had complete pictures. And some of the other animals, they had run out of stones. So they had parts of pictures. And then there were little sprinkles of stars that didn't seem to make any picture. And those were the rocks that Coyote had thrown over his shoulder that had just scattered any which way. But you know, the thing that got Coyote the most was that he had not realized that he needed to stop and make a picture of himself. He had never done that. He had all the stones. He could have done it anytime, but he did not even think of it. And that is why every night at darkness, Coyote looks at the sky and just howls because there's no picture of Coyote in the sky. And that's the story.
That's why coyotes howl. I gotcha. I'm from Montana, so I've heard quite a few coyotes.
Oh, yeah.
I love stories like that that sort of explain why things are today. You know, why do coyotes howl? Well, because of this story. You have another story for us.
Sure, I do. I have one about rabbit and coyotes, which is kind of interesting because coyotes usually the trickster, but in this one, rabbit is, and it's a story that's from a book, which I cannot for some reason remember the name of, but it is a book of stories from Mexico. So one day Coyote was, so many stories start like this. Coyote was hungry and he was running and running and running along looking for something to eat when he saw rabbit. And rabbit was asleep under a tree, which is very unusual to catch rabbit out of his hole asleep under a tree. So Coyote said, there goes my dinner. So he loped up and he put his two front paws right on top of Rabbit. Well, Rabbit woke up and he knew he was in trouble. But he looked up in the tree, it was a mesquite tree, and there was a hornet's nest. And that hornet's nest looked sort of like a bell. And so Rabbit is a very, very quick thinker. So he said, "Oh, Coyote, you've got me. I guess you're going to eat me." And Coyote said, "You bet I am." "And that's good," said Rabbit, "because, well, I shouldn't tell you this." "What?" said Coyote. "Well, I guess I will tell you. But see that hole over there?" And he pointed to a hole in the ground. He said, "That's where all the rabbits, the, you know, young rabbits, the young, tender, tasty rabbits are in school. And I'm waiting here because when school is over, I have to ring that bell." And he pointed upstairs up to where the hornet's nest was. "And when I ring that bell, the young rabbits, young, tender, juicy, tasty rabbits are going to pop out of that hole one by one. And if I had let you, if you didn't eat me, you could eat them. You could just pop them in your mouth like popcorn, one after the other." And Coyote said, "Rabbit, you are so stupid. You should not have told me that, because now I'm going to let you go and I'm going to ring that bell." And Rabbit said, "Well, you shouldn't. I mean, go ahead." "What?" said Coyote. "Well, if you ring that bell now, they're going to know that something is wrong, because it's not time for school to let out. You have to wait until the sun goes to the top of that tree, and then you can ring the bell." Coyote said, "I cannot believe you told me all this, because I'm just going to let you go, and I'm going to ring that bell when it's time, and I am going to eat all those little tasty bunny rabbits when they come out of school. And it'll be on your head, Rabbit." And Rabbit said, "Oh, I am so ashamed, but I'm going to go while the going's good." So Rabbit pretended to be sad and jumped away, but he stayed around to kind of see what would happen. Well, Coyote, he knew it was a while till the sun came down to the top of the tree, so he took a nap. And he put his big head on his big paws and fell asleep. But all at once he woke up and he saw that the sun was just hitting the top of that tree, and it was time. It was time. So Coyote picked up a big long stick, and he whacked that hornet's nest. Now, the hornets had been gone. I mean, that's why Rabbit told him to wait. The hornets had been out foraging, but they were all back in the nest by now. And so when Coyote whacked the hornet's nest, they all began to buzz, and they were pretty angry. Bzzz. And Coyote pricked up his ears. He's listening. He said, "You know, that's not very loud." And he looked over to the hole and no bunnies were coming out. He said, "I better whack it a little harder." So he reared back and he took that stick and he whacked it again. And this time the hornet's nest swung back and forth, and the hornets were even madder than before. And so they were buzzing even louder. Bzzz. Well, Coyote hit it again because it still wasn't loud enough and no bunnies were coming out, but still nothing happened. So he said, "I better hit it for all I'm worth." So he reared all the way back and whacked that hornet's nest so hard that it fell right out of the tree, landed in front of Coyote, split open, and those hornets, they came out like a dark cloud and they covered Coyote and began to sting and sting and sting him. And he said, "Ay, ay, and he took off running. He didn't stop until he saw some water up ahead of him, and he jumped into the water, and the hornets just lifted up off of him and flew away. Well, he was covered with stings, and he knew, even without seeing Rabbit over on the other hillside laughing, he knew that he had rung the wrong bell.
I love it, Sally. I love that. So that is a battle of two tricksters, the rabbit and the coyote. You know, I almost felt sorry for that coyote.
I know. All he wanted was dinner.
Yeah, but then, yeah, he would have eaten the rabbit, so I shouldn't feel too sorry for it.
Yeah. Well, some of the older stories are pretty gruesome.
Yeah.
It's, you know, tooth nature red in tooth and claw. So.
Well, Sally, I really enjoyed all your stories here today. You're great at telling them. Best of luck to you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, anyone who listens to our program knows our next guest, Dr. Sneha Desai.
Not only is Snea an accomplished psychologist, but she's an actress in short films, a TikTok sensation, a part-time chef, and what we love about Snea is she's also a top-notch storyteller. She's told her stories on our program many times and at the Moth and other venues. Snea, always great to have you here on So What's Your Story?
Thank you so much, Eric. I absolutely love telling stories. So I grabbed this opportunity as soon as you messaged me saying that you wanted me on your show.
Well, we appreciate that. Now, Snea, you're well known in the Houston storytelling community for your personal narratives. You tell great stories about your family, your upbringing, your work, of course, Coda, your dog. But tonight we're looking at fiction stories, good old folk tales. And you grew up in an Indian household. Are these kind of stories important in Indian culture?
Yes, I think that stories make up a huge part of the Indian culture. Personally, I know my grandfather was extremely fond of stories. And so he would read stories out to me every day. He would pay me to read books and tell him the story back from the books. So yeah, stories have been a huge part of my life, for sure. Well,
sounds like it's in your blood. And from what I've seen of Indian folktales, they're full of this, what's called a trickster character. And that's our theme for the evening. We're looking at trickster characters all around the world. And I understand you got some stories tonight that fit that theme. So let's hear one.
Okay, so the first story that I wanted to tell you is called The Farmer and the Moneylender. And so once upon a time, there was a farmer who suffered so much at the hands of a moneylender. Whether there were good harvests or bad harvests, the farmer was always poor and the moneylender was always rich. One day, left with no money, and so he went to the moneylender's house and said, "You can't squeeze water from a stone and you have nothing to get by me now, so you might as well tell me the secret of becoming rich." The moneylender said, "My friend, riches come from Ram, which is an Indian name. Ask him." "Thank you, I will," said the simple farmer, and he prepared some girdle cakes, which in today's world, if you know what parathas are, if you've ever eaten parathas or naan or roti at the Indian restaurant, those are what girdle cakes were. Mm-hmm. So he prepared three of them to last him on the journey, and he set out to find Ram. So first, he met a Brahmin, and he gave him one of those cakes, and he asked him to point the road towards Ram. But the Brahmin took the cake and went about his way without saying a word. So the farmer moved on and he met a jogi, which is also a devotee. And to him also, he gave a cake, but received no help in return. At last, he came upon a poor man sitting under a tree. And when he found out that the poor man was hungry, the farmer, who was so kind, gave him the last cake and sat down next to him and started talking to him. So this poor man asked him, "Where are you going?" And this guy said, "Oh, I have a long journey before me because I'm about to go find Ram. And do you know which way I could go?" And the poor man, he smiled and he said, "Maybe I do know which way to go because I am Ram. And what do you want from me?" So the poor farmer, he told him the whole story, and Ram took pity on him and gave him a conch shell and showed him how to blow it in a particular way and said, "Remember, whatever you wish for, you will only have to blow the conch one way, this particular way, and your wish will be fulfilled. And don't care too much about the moneylender, because even magic is not proof against their wiles." So the farmer was extremely joyful. He went back to his village. He was rejoicing. And there the moneylender noticed that he was in high spirits, and said to himself, "Some good fortune must have befallen the stupid fellow." And so he went over to the farmer's house, congratulated him on his good fortune, and very cunningly pretended like he had heard all about it, And very soon, the farmer found himself telling the whole story, except for the secret of how to blow the conch. Because, you know, the farmer was not that foolish to tell him that. Nevertheless, the moneylender was determined to have this conch by hook or by crook. And so the villain that he was, he waited for a favorable opportunity and stole it. Now, this moneylender, he almost burst himself trying to blow this conch in every possible way, but he finally gave up the secret as a bad job. And he was very determined to succeed. So he went back to the farmer and said, "Now, my friend, I've got your conch, but I can't use it. You don't have it, so you can't use it either. So the matter is at a standstill unless we make a bargain. Now, promise to give you back your conch and never to interfere with you using it on one condition, which is this. Whatever you get from it, I'm to get double." And the farmer said, "Never, never. That would be like old business all over again." And the cunning moneylender said, "Not at all. You will have your share. Now, please, don't be a dog in the manger. For if you get all you want, what can it matter to you if I'm rich or poor?" So finally, the farmer was forced to yield, and from that time, no matter what he gained by the power of the conch, the moneylender gained double. And this knowledge weighed on the farmer's mind day and night until he had no satisfaction out of anything he did receive. Now, finally, there came a very dry season. So dry that all of the farmer's crops withered away due to a lack of rain. And then he blew his conch and wished for a well to water them. And lo and behold, there was a well. But the moneylender had two new beautiful wells. And this was too much for the farmer to stand. So our farmer friend brooded and brooded and brooded over it. Till at last a bright idea came into his head. And he seized the conch, blew it loudly, and cried out, "O Ram, I wish to be blind of one eye." And so he was. In a twinkling, he became blind in one eye. But the moneylender, of course, was blind of both eyes. And in trying to steer his way between the two new wells, he fell into one and drowned. And now this story shows a farmer about how he got better of a moneylender by losing only one of his eyes.
Wow. That was very clever to lose one eye to make the moneylender blind. But to be honest, I think I would have just let the moneylender be rich.
I would have pushed him out of my consciousness, really. Let it go.
So, Sneha, you ordinarily tell personal narratives. So do you approach telling these fictional folk tales differently than your personal narratives?
Yeah, absolutely. I think these fictional stories or even someone else's true story, I think, has my own interpretation and is kind of objective, right? Because it can have so many different interpretations. And I also want to do justice to the writer. So I don't like to change much about it. And I tell these stories from my interpretation and hope that it's the way the writer wanted to see us readers narrate that.
Definite differences between the two types of stories. So do you have any parting words for us, Sneha?
Well, all I'm going to say is stay safe, everyone. Get your vaccinations and keep listening to our stories.
Very good advice. Thanks again, Sneha. You take care.
You too. Thank you.
Well, our next guest tonight is Richard Marsh. Richard's coming us tonight from his home country in Ireland. Richard's a tour guide, storyteller, and an author who's written the book A World of Tricksters, available on Amazon. Richard, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. I'm going to talk about trickster stories, obviously, because that's what the program's all about.
Yeah, I see you wrote a book on tricksters, so I think we got the right guy for this program. And could you tell us in a nutshell, what is it about tricksters that make them so appealing to us humans everywhere?
The stories about tricks are entertaining, but they carry a serious message for the young, weak, vulnerable, and socially disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. It's possible to overcome bullying, whether institutional or personal. Mm-hmm. A well-known psychologist, Bruno Bettelheim, he pointed out, morality is not the issue in these tales, but rather assurance that one can succeed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what tricks are about.
Now, Richard, I know your stories come from all over the world, but tonight we're going to focus on your Irish stories. So let's hear your first story.
There's a dance hall in a little village called Trurine in County Mayo. Now, County Mayo is like the boondocks in Ireland, and the people there would be treated like hillbillies in the United States. It was a very popular dance hall, and there was a strong rule. There was no drink served inside, soft drinks, of course, but no alcohol. And if you had drink taken, in the Irish expression, in other words, if you had had a few too many, you were not allowed to come in the first place. So people came from miles around, and they didn't always know each other, but they would recognize each other. They'd all be familiar to each other. But this one night, a very handsome, very well-dressed gentleman came in. And the men were looking at him, didn't like the competition. The women looked at him and said, I might be interested in that. But when he went around to the women to ask if they would dance, they suddenly changed. There was something about him they didn't like. They said, no, thank you. And finally, he found a young woman willing to dance with him. And she was very happy she accepted because he was a marvelous dancer. They danced into that. She had a great time. And finally, he said, will we go out for a breath of fresh air? Well, you know, dance halls can get pretty hot. And it's also code for a little bit of smooching. So they went outside and there were a few young fellows standing around outside the entrance, and they said later that this man and the young woman came out. They got into a big, fancy black car parked on the side of the road, closed the doors, and after a brief time, they heard the woman's voice saying, "Get your hands off me, you dirty devil!" And there was a puff of smoke. The car disappeared. The woman was sitting in the road. And a goat wearing clothes was running down the road with fire at the ends of his horns. And they shouted into the dance hall, come out, come out, it's the devil, come out and look, come out and look. And people came out and they saw the goat with the clothes on and the lights at the end of his horns. They knew they saw that. And then they were told the story by the fellows outside the dance hall about what happened. And that's a story I heard. I asked lots of people over the years, and even when I was in Mayo and traveling around, asked people there and other Mayo people, oh, yeah, they heard the story. They didn't know much about it. And in 2005, I just happened to attend a photographic exhibition in Dublin. And there were pictures, black and white pictures of this dance hall, which was now in ruins. It was popular back in the 50s into the 60s. And this local woman from the area had taken these photographs, very artistic, and she had newspaper clippings of the real story, what had really happened.
Okay.
This is what really happened. These young fellows who were standing outside the hall had tried to get in. They had had drink taken. They weren't allowed in. They went and borrowed a goat, borrowed clothes off a clothesline, borrowed a couple of flashlights, and dressed up the goat, sent him down the way, and then shouted into the dance hall, look, come out and have a look, and made up the rest of the story. Now, I tell that story as an example of one source, one type of source that I think is where some folk tales come from. Mm-hmm. Something really happened. And it, in a way, it's like flying saucers. I think most of the time, people actually did see something in the sky.
Sure.
They interpreted it in a way that isn't generally accepted.
Yeah. So in America, we call those urban legends. It's when some scary incident occurs and then people misunderstand it or they exaggerate it. And pretty soon, you don't know if it's how much of it is true or not.
Yeah, and an urban legend is something that sounds possible. Mm-hmm. So, and they make good stories.
Okay, Richard. Now, I understand you got one more story for us. I think it's called The Train in the Tunnel.
This goes back to the days a long time ago when they didn't have lighting on the trains. There was an Irishman and an English soldier sitting in a carriage facing a beautiful young woman and her mother. There were no lights in the train, so when it went into the tunnel, it was completely dark. There's a sound of a kiss and then a loud slap. When the train came out of the tunnel, the soldier was holding his hand to his cheek. The mother glanced fondly at her daughter. The daughter's face was blank, and the Irishman was the picture of innocence. The soldier thought, the Irishman must have kissed the girl, and she tried to stop him and hit me instead. The mother thought, my daughter is a good girl. The soldier kissed her, and she slapped him. The daughter thought, the soldier must be gay and kissed the Irishman and got slapped for it. The Irishman thought, Ireland won, England zero.
Yeah.
The next time we go into a tunnel, I'll smooch my hand again and give the soldier another slap.
Yeah, that was a great one. So I got to sort that in my head a little bit. The Irish guy kisses his own hand and slaps the Englishman. Then everybody gets their own version of what really happened.
Yeah.
Well, Richard, thanks for all those great stories and for enlightening us on the aspect of trickster characters. Before we let you go, I want to mention your book, A World of Tricksters. Richard, could you just, in a nutshell, brief us on what this book entails?
It's 154 stories from 29 countries. Because Ireland has a lot of tricksters in it, it's pretty heavy on Irish material. And it goes from Native American stories, which would be the trickster gods, the demigods of Native American traditions, into the Irish, Chinese, African, they're just from all over the place. A few from Latin America.
Huh. Well, Richard, thank you so much for being our guest here, and good luck to you.
Great. Thank you for inviting me, and as Minnie Pearl would say, just so proud to be here.
Oh, yes. Okay. Thanks again, Richard. You take care.
I know.
Well, that is our show for today, folks, and I'd like to thank all of our guests, Chuji Kingfisher, Scott Hilton Davis, Sally Bates Goodrow, Dr. Sneha Desai, and Richard Marsh. I'd like to remind you one more time that KPFT is in the midst of their pledge drive, so please consider helping us out. Help support this station to keep this unique quality program going strong. You can do so by calling 713-526-5738 or go to kpft.org and click on the donate button. And don't you dare move, because Charles Hightower is up next with a cool mix of soul music on R&B Gold. This is Eric Keene, and with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after.
He's with those tricksters and hucksters.
KPFT.
This is DJ Tom Albright coming at you with the Jazz Latino HD show every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m. with Latin Jazz and Jazz Latin, followed by an hour of hot salsa dura made for your dancing shoes from 6 to 7 p.m. every Tuesday. And if that's not enough, the Jazz Latino HD show is repeated every Thursday from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. All that on Houston's community station, KPFT HD2. to the veritably vital virtual radio source via the electron waves on the internet. Just go to kpft.org and scroll down. On the right side is the button to listen to HD2, or go to archive.kpft.org to listen anytime, 24/7.
Byron Phoenix. Join me each week for Soul Deluxe, a weekly mix show spotlighting classic and modern soul music. Soul Deluxe exposes listeners to the work and voices of artists and musicians they may otherwise never encounter, and helps introduce them to the very arts and cultural movements that are present around them. Remember, Soul Deluxe each week on this station.
You're listening to